This episode has descriptions of sexual content and violence. Listener discretion is advised.
Looking for weird? You found it. The Xandron Stone Science and Supernatural Podcast. From ghosts and hauntings to black-eyed kids, crypto creatures, cults, exorcisms, UFOs, and everything in between. If it's out there and it's weird, we're going to talk about it. Xandron Stone, the Science and Supernatural Podcast. Listen now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podfix. And remember to live life in excess.
Mystified. Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Mystified. This is a podcast where we bring you strange and unusual stories. My name is Tasha.
And this is Steven.
And we are your tour guides for the next hour or so through this strain of reality that we are currently in. After the hour, you're on your own. You got to figure out life by yourself.
That's a lot of responsibility.
But we're here for, but we're going to guide them for at least an hour.
I meant for us.
Oh, yeah, it is. But we're going to be fine because we have absolutely no idea what we're fucking doing. So, you know, just like everyone else in the world, we just kind of bumble through it. Yeah.
You say so.
Are you doubting us? Don't doubt the power.
Okay.
Okay. So Halloween is over. Spooky time is over. By the time this releases, the Day of the Dead will be over. And it's fucking hot outside for some reason.
Yeah, again.
What? I thought like winter was coming, but no, it's not. Which is kind of rude because it was nice and chilly. I was wearing boots and sweaters and now it's in the mid-70s, which isn't hot. I mean, to be fair, that's like perfect spring weather. It's kind of bullshit right now. I was, you know.
Yeah.
Wanting dark, cold, wet, snowy days.
Probably not going to get too many of those in Texas.
Or ever, really. Because aren't like the polar ice caps not freezing? Or
yeah, Antarctica? With the Arctic Sea.
But
yeah, I mean, who knows?
Cool.
Who knows?
Well, next week it's supposed to get in the 60s, in the 50s. So, yeah, we have that. Maybe it's time to move farther north. I wonder how Canada is this time of year. Like in the middle of Canada.
I'm not sure.
Are there bears?
Yeah.
What kind of bears? Like the little bears that like dig in your garbage can, or the ones that like want to maul you and, you know, play with your like broken body for hours.
I think both. Oh, I think both kinds.
Okay. We'll have to think about that. I don't know.
I mean, be fine, I suppose. Just have to
watch out for bears.
Yeah.
Oh, do we have bear repellent spray? Shark repellent spray. What about bear repellent spray?
Actually, I think there is bear repellent spray, but I would rather not trust my safety with a bear to an aerosol chemical.
We'd fuck up and buy the wrong one and it would be like bear piss smell and like attract the bears to us.
Yeah.
That would be bad. Okay. So tonight we are going to be talking about some murder for hire plots that go very, 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 very wrong. Really excited about this one because a lot of our murder episodes, like, you know, the murderer wins. I mean, sometimes they get caught. A lot of times they don't, but they do like make the murder happen. So it's kind of nice when, you know, the good guys win.
And by good guys, you mean the normal people that are just trying to not be murdered?
Exactly. You know, the everyday run of the mill, please don't fucking kill me people.
Yeah, the people who are just trying to go through their life and not be murdered.
Yeah, yeah, you know, just like that. We're also doing a clean out the fridge drink session because we have a lot of like one or two beers left of all the beers and drinks we've been drinking. So far, I've had a Truly lemon, a Truly lime, and now I'm on to Love Street Blonde. What have you had?
Somehow meandered into the Deep Ellum Brewing Co. Dallas Blonde, which I think this was one that you picked out.
Yeah, I love her. She's so cute. Is that the only one you've cleared out? Or
I found a Revolver Brewing Co. Backyard B that I also took care of.
Excellent. We're making room in the fridge again so we can buy winter beers if it fucking will cool back off again. I want to drink the thick brown ales, but
I drink the same beers all the time.
It's hard for me to drink those when it's hot outside. I got to be like cold and they've got to be cold.
Go outside.
I still feel the outside though. I'm aware of the out. I'm in tune with the weather.
You make it sound like you're talking about a beer for like going hiking in the mountains. No, or the woods,
but you don't drink do like fucking shine. First of all, I haven't been hiking in the woods. Shut up. But you don't drink like Shiner or Guinness when it's like 90 fucking degrees outside, unless you're me in a country that where that's okay. But I don't in Texas because it's hot and then it's you're so full and it feels like you just ate like 12 loaves of bread. You're just laying there like bloated. It's not cute.
That's totally fine.
No, I need it to be cold.
Anyway, sidetracked.
Yeah. That never happens. But yeah, so we're going to clear out these beers and so we don't have anything new. It's just the lefties, the leftovers.
Yep.
I'm going to go with my story first. I don't know why I like say this. I always go first. Let's just make this a rule. It's a thing. If this is your first time with us,
announce it every time.
I will announce it because I like being the boss, the leader, but I go first every time.
It's more Are like you ready? The opening act.
Shut up. It is because usually your story like just totally fucking takes the wind out of my sails. And then I couldn't recover enough to tell mine. Like,
yeah,
because yours are intense. So I picked a story with a lot of hard fucking names. So here we go. Noella Rukundo was living in Melbourne, Australia when her stepmother passed away. She flew home to Burundi, I think they say it, a country in Central Africa for the funeral. Her husband, Balinga Kalala, was not able to travel with her and stayed home. Noella was mourning the loss of her loved one and was trying to relax in the hotel room, but was so upset she just wanted to like sleep kind of. I think it was like right after the funeral. She goes back to the hotel room to like relax, but I mean, when I do it, when you're depressed, you just want to fucking sleep, right? And just forget the world exists.
Yeah.
I kind of want to do that all the time now. Her husband calls from Melbourne to check on her. Balinga listens to her talk about, you know, how sad she is, how depressed she is, and that she just wants to get some sleep. And he says that she should actually go outside, get some fresh air, that walking around, getting some sunshine would actually make her feel better. Noella's husband finally convinces her to go for a walk. But when she steps outside, a man points a gun at her face and says, "Don't scream. If you start screaming, I will shoot you. They're going to catch me, but you'll already be dead." Okay, bad way to start a walk, but yeah, I'm definitely just going to go ahead and say that. Okay. Terrified, Noella did as she was told. She was pushed into a nearby car and blindfolded. They drove in silence for about 30 to 40 minutes. And then Noella was hoisted out of the car and pushed into a door into some kind of building. She was then tied to a chair. They asked her a very strange question. "You woman, what did you do for this man to pay us to kill you?" "What are you talking about?" Noella replied. She was afraid and confused. She's like, "What are you talking about? I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know why anybody want this to happen to me." And he was like, "Well, Balinga, your husband, sent us to kill you." Noella starts screaming at them, telling them that they are lying. They had to be lying, right? I mean, her husband of like 10 or 11 years back home calling to check on her. Surely, you know, he wouldn't have paid someone to fucking kill her.
Right.
Spoiler. He did. Okay. So Noella didn't believe them until one of the men got out his phone and called someone and then put it on speakerphone. "We have her," said the man. Then Noella heard her husband's voice. "Kill her." As the men discussed where to dump her body, Noella passed out. So that's fucked up. Can you imagine, like, you know, you're scared. You're with these crazy men. I'm pretty sure she's still blindfolded. Like, I don't think they've untied her or done anything. Like, right. I mean, and, you know, the one voice you would want to hear that would actually provide comfort literally says for these hitmen to kill you.
Right.
Just fucked up. When Noella comes to, the hitmen do something that she never thought would happen. They tell her they are not going to kill her. By some twisted fate, the hitman her bitch-ass husband hired didn't kill women or children. They also knew her brother. So, yeah. They did keep her hostage, though, for 2 days and extorted more money from her husband. Then, 3 days later, they drove Noella out to a deserted road and left her there. They gave her a few parting gifts. First, a message. Quote, "We want you to go back and tell other stupid women like you what happened to you." Okay. I guess so that, you know, they would know that their husbands sometimes try to hire them to kill the wives. I don't know, but
yeah,
I'm not sure why she's stupid, but okay, cool. The second was evidence, a memory card with recorded phone conversations of her husband discussing the murder and the receipts for the Western Union transfers for the money.
Okay.
So, you know, paper trail. Clearly this guy is really, really good at, you know, hiring hitmen to begin with. Noella manages to make it back to the embassy and with the help of her local priest, make it back to Melbourne. By this time, having thought the hitmen had done their job, Belinga had told everyone that Noella had been killed in a tragic accident. Mourners were now flocking to her home to mourn her. Noella met her husband 11 years earlier, right after she arrived in Australia from Burundi. That's a hard one to say, Burundi.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He was a refugee from Congo, and they had the same social worker at the resettlement agency that helped them acclimate. Since Belinga already knew English, their social worker often recruited him to translate for Noella, who only spoke Swahili. They fell in love, moved in together in Melbourne, in a suburb of Kings Park, and grew their family. Noella already had 5 children, and her and Belinga had 3 more. Belinga had fled the rebel army that had ransacked his village, killing his first wife and child. He had also been violent sometimes, but Noella never thought that he would try to kill her. I mean, that's a pretty fucked up backstory, but it's still not okay to try to kill your fucking wife, dude.
Yeah, that's still pretty fucking random. Yeah.
On the night of February 22nd, 2015, as mourners were leaving Belinga and Noella's house, Noella stepped out of the car, parked in front of her home, and confronted her husband. He said, quote, "Is it my eyes? Is it a ghost?" She just looked at him and said, "Surprise, I'm alive." She's got ball. Like, she's a bad bee.
Yeah.
Like, 100%. Because I don't even think I could confront somebody that tried to kill me, especially if, like, I'd had an intimate relationship with them. Like, I don't know. That's, you go, girl. You did it. After the confrontation, Noella says that her husband begged her for forgiveness, but it was too late. She had no room for forgiveness, and she had already called the police. So, yeah. The police were able to record Belinga confessing to the crime over the phone to his wife, and one of the many times he called to, you know, beg for forgiveness. Like, "I'm so sorry, I tried to murder you," and, like, you know, they recorded it. In his December trial, Belinga Kalala pleaded guilty to incitement for murder and was sentenced to 9 years in prison. At his sentencing, he addressed his former wife, saying, quote, "Sometimes the devil can come into someone to do something, but after they do it, they start thinking, why I did that thing." Noella isn't forgiving or taking any more shit. She says, quote, "I will stand up like a strong woman. My past life, that is gone. I'm starting a new life now."
Huh.
Wasn't him, it was a devil.
Mm-hmm.
Like, bro.
Mm-hmm.
No. But
I mean, not just that, but the whole bullshit about, you know, when you do a thing and then you have a voice in the back of your head that asks why mm-hmm. you did it. Dude, there was plenty of time for you to reverse be like, course no.
mm-hmm.
because they didn't kill her the moment you had that idea.
Yeah.
You fucking dumbass.
Yeah. It's total bullshit.
But
she escaped. I mean, lucky for her, he just picked the wrong hitman. I mean,
the hitman with a conscience.
Yeah. I mean, they still wanted some more money. So they still took her to extort money. But
I mean, more than likely, they were just like mercenaries. But
and plus they were like, man, we can't kill her. We know her brother.
Mm-hmm.
He's still in prison. She's moved on with her life. Hopefully, doing her thing, living her best life. But yeah,
it's fucked up. There's a part of your story that I'll have to get to when I do mine. But there's one thing that like stands out in that I totally don't understand.
Yeah.
But I'll address it as I go through mine.
Hey, y'all, this is Brittany and Daniel from the new podcast, Chilled and Thrilled. We're a married couple who love to laugh and tell scary stories about true crime, the paranormal, and all things creepy.
Join us each Saturday for a deep dive into this macabre and twisted world we live in. Listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere you listen.
Let's get chilled and thrilled.
All right, let's hear whatever crazy story you brought for us.
Okay, so for mine, we are going to be staying stateside, but we're going to travel to the Pacific Northwest, a place where everything is always fucking crazy for some reason.
Yeah, that's usually a shitstorm of wildness going on up there at all times.
This story fits. We give a lot of credit to Florida about being like that.
Yeah.
The Pacific Northwest like has a lot of that shit too, just wild.
So there should be like Oregon Man. It's like, Florida Man.
Well, Oregon Man would just be a violent murderer. Florida Man can do all kinds of crazy stuff. Like,
at least he can be entertaining. Yeah,
Oregon Man's just murderous.
That's terrible. So, okay.
Anyway, so this is the story of Susan Walters. Susan Walters was just your average ER nurse until one night in September of 2006 when she would suddenly be thrust into the spotlight and heralded as a hero. Susan never wanted to be a hero, and as such, she hasn't spent a great deal of time talking about herself or her life. She's chosen to stay a private citizen and has granted few interviews, but she is a remarkable woman all the same. All we really know about her past is that she had a rather tumultuous upbringing. Her parents split up when she was in second grade, and she spent her childhood bouncing around the country between parents. She is quoted as having said, "My parents loved me, but they couldn't teach me how to have a successful marriage any more than they could teach me how to fly." That's not an uncommon sentiment, and it doesn't even necessarily have anything to do with the fact that her parents were split. Children who grow up in unhappy homes in general tend to struggle with relationships and families as a result. Hell, it's even possible that her parents themselves had grown up in a chaotic circumstance. Other than that, she doesn't really say much of anything about her past. It doesn't seem like there was anything terrible, just, normal divorced child stuff.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, Susan seems to have prospered. She spent her 20s focusing on her education and became a licensed practical nurse and then went on to become a registered nurse.
Cool. RN. All right.
She moved to Oregon in the early 80s and everything seemed to be going well. In 1988, her mother and a friend put a personal ad out for Susan in the Williamette Week. The ad gives a glimpse into who Susan was at the time, and it reads, quote, "Someone different, single white female, 33, overweight, but not over life, seeks single male who wants more out of a relationship than just slender, active healthcare professional, enjoys exploring the Northwest, interested in conversation, good times with somebody who is intelligent, thoughtful, and full of humor, must be emotionally, physically mature. If you are seeking a bright, funny lady who is adventurous enough to advertise here, then please reply."
Okay, I like Susan.
Yeah, that's a
spunky little thing. Mm-hmm. Okay. Curvy lady. Ain't nothing fucking wrong with that.
But also proud of it and not embarrassed about it.
Yeah, she's like, I still go fucking hiking and shit. Go hurt. She's got balls because there's bears in there. I know there's bears and wolves and fucking other things. I can't think of anything worse than snakes. There's
a lot of things that are worse than that, hiding in the woods in the Pacific Northwest.
Like what?
Well, they're human, but
oh no,
I'm, they're just yeah. There's reasons to not go hiking around.
Yeah. So you go, Susan.
Yeah.
You live your best fucking life, girl.
So, not long after, a man.
Wait, I was like picturing like a fucking monster when you said not a human, but like Bigfoot popped in my head. And I was like, wait, what?
there are a lot of like Bigfoot-esque sightings. I know
were like, you know, people are the monsters, but my brain instantly saw like two-headed creatures. And I was like, what's worse than a bear and a wolf? A wolf bear. Like, okay, I'm sorry. Please continue with your story about Susan. Thank you.
Anyway, So a man by the name of Mike Kunhalsen answered the ad. Hi, different. He started out. He then went on to identify himself as a 39-year-old divorced white male who loved the outdoors. Okay. Susan was instantly intrigued by Mike, and the two would spend many long hours on the phone with each other before ever meeting face to face. I think she says they spent like 100 hours chatting back and forth on the phone before they ever got together.
Right.
So she remembers him as having a nice voice and also being impressed that he enjoyed deep conversation. So he wasn't just a sleaze. It was like, hey, you know.
He wasn't like, tell me about your titties.
Yeah.
Like that. Like,
yeah, he seemed like he was an all right guy. So they had their first date in February of 1988. And within a year, they headed to Reno to tie the knot.
Yay.
Because they just got on really, really well.
Yeah.
But the bliss would be short-lived. Not long after they got married, things changed. The two spent the majority of their time at home because Mike turned out to be very antisocial.
Okay.
He blamed this on having seen combat in Vietnam, but Susan doesn't believe that to be true. And actually pulling his military records show him as being a switchboard operator.
Wow.
So
he was just not good in crowds.
Yeah. Which that didn't appeal to Susan. She liked to go out. Yeah,
she sounds very outgoing. Yeah.
One of her favorite things to do was to go to comedy clubs and sit in the front row.
Oh, yeah, Susan.
80s comedy clubs. Overweight lady sitting in the front row. Like for terrible comics and could roll with it.
Yeah, could probably like say something back to your ass. Like, I'll break your little skinny ass. Like, yeah.
Yeah, like.
I love Susan.
I know. Sweet. She seems like an awesome lady.
Yeah.
After the pair had been married a few years, Mike got a new job as a janitorial supervisor for Fantasy Adult Video. And if you look at this dude, like if you picture in your head, creepy porno store janitor,
it's Mike.
Like
the glasses, everything,
glasses, balding,
mustache.
Beard.
Mm-hmm.
God. Like just looks tan, like he's dripping
tan
grease.
Tan clothes. Like he likes those neutrals.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, Susan, honey, you could have done better.
Yeah, she really could have. Because
she's an RN, like she's working a lot. She doesn't have time to go out. And
not only that, she's also an ER.
Yeah.
Her
life is hectic.
So
it's okay, honey. We all make mistakes.
As time goes on, Mike starts slowly revealing that he is pretty much a complete nihilist.
Oh, God.
She describes his outlook as, quote, his life philosophy was life is a shit sandwich. And every day you take another bite until you die.
Wow, he just sounds
super
like,
fun guy.
Right?
Yeah. But she managed to spend 17 years putting up with his bullshit. He was possessive and he scrutinized her spending habits. Now, this is really odd to me because I guarantee she made a lot more fucking money than he did.
An RN?
But
ERRN? Hell yeah.
Yeah, he would penny pick her to death.
She was probably like a trauma nurse. Fuck yeah, she made more money than him.
Yeah.
But that's why he had to fucking penny pick it because, you know, it wasn't, he had to control the money somehow.
He had to do something that wasn't be a loser.
Right.
So in 2005, Susan was done. She'd spent over $10,000 trying to get him help, like
going to therapy and stuff like that.
16 years.
17. Yeah.
17 years.
Yeah. Girl. She put in the work and it just, she finally was like, fuck this. Like, it's not getting any better. He would get a little better after they would go for a while, but then eventually he would go right back to just being a complete asshole. She said that one thing, like, she would go to kiss him and instead he would like burp, like, just a complete fucking piece of shit, right?
What a douche.
So she wanted to be happy again and she wanted to enjoy her life.
Yeah.
She still loved him, but he was dragging her down and she was just tired of it. So in September of 05, she kicked him out and he moved in with his dad. So he wasn't happy about this. He wanted to get back into Susan's life. Mm-hmm. But she wasn't interested. And by July of 2006, she had decided that she wanted to formally divorce him. He did not take the news well. And Susan says that for the first time in her life, she actually began to fear him because he just kind of snapped.
Yeah.
This also came as a blow to Mike because this was not long after he had lost his job. So he was like already spiraling.
Lost his job as super janitor at the porn store.
Yeah.
How do you get the only reason you would get fired from that is
it's going to be really gross.
Yeah. You're being a total fucking creep weirdo or you're not cleaning. Like, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, all right.
So he's, you know, going down this morose tunnel of self-loathing.
Woe is me.
But she's having a great time. And she said that she was more relaxed than she had been in years. And she began enjoying her life again for the first time in a long fucking time.
Oh, yeah, Susan.
Until September 6th, 2006. She ended her shift in the ER at Providence Portland Medical Center and decided to swing by the Perfect Look hair salon for a little pampering.
Yes, yes.
She remembers waiting her turn and reading a poem in a magazine. The poem has stuck with her all these years and eerily foreshadowed the events that would soon transpire. Quote, I will not die an unlived life, it began. I will not live in fear. The poem is by Dawn Markova and is about her refusal to let her cancer diagnosis get her down. It's about reaffirming and taking control back of one's life, refusing to submit and give in when you still have fight left. Susan spent about an hour at the salon and then drove to her Southeast Portland home. Upon arriving home, she found a note from Mike in the mudroom. It read, Sue, haven't been sleeping, had to get away, went to the beach. Now, he doesn't live here anymore.
Yeah, so why would he tell her that?
Apparently, she had asked him to, if he could come by and like feed her cats or something.
Right.
She had something going on. I don't remember the details on it, but still, yeah, the note is very out of place and weird. But she didn't seem to think a whole lot about it. And she hadn't changed the locks or the security code on the home that the two had shared. It didn't seem like it was that big of a deal at the time. So she unlocks the back door and goes into the kitchen, disables the alarm, and then goes outside to check her mail. She took her time. The evening was warm and bright, and she stood in the yard leafing through the mail before heading back in. Upon re-entering the house, something struck her as odd. The house seemed darker than it should, specifically her bedroom. She wondered to herself if she had forgotten to open the drapes that morning. She didn't have long to ponder this, though, as suddenly she was rushed by a man who had been hiding behind the bedroom door. The attacker stood nearly 6 foot tall and was dressed in khakis, a blue striped shirt, and wore a baseball cap pulled down low over his eyes. His long blonde hair was tied back in a ponytail and he wore a beard. His hands were covered in bright yellow gloves and he was wielding a claw hammer.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fucking terrifying. And you know, like, she's probably a creature of habit. So she gets up every day and opens those fucking drapes.
Yeah. That's so, why she noticed it.
Having that intuition as soon as she walked in the house.
This is where things get interesting, though. Susan was 5'4", overweight, and had two bad knees. Most people's first instinct would have been to run if they came across an armed assailant in a dark room. If Susan would have fled, she wouldn't have been able to outrun the hammer-wielding lunatic very well but that wasn't even what popped into her head. Cassie is an ER nurse. Susan had been trained in self-defense. She had learned how to get out of various holds, and she had learned that when someone is armed with a weapon that they must swing, your best bet is to crowd them.
Yeah.
If they can't swing the weapon in a full arc, its blows will be greatly diminished. So that's what she does. She advances on him, and the first blow that he lands hits her in the left temple, but it's not nearly as big as if she would have been running away.
Right.
So who are you and what do you want? She remembers screaming. The assailant doesn't answer and he doesn't stop hitting her, but he's not getting good full blows. So she starts realizing that simply crowding him isn't going to stop him. So she decides to use her other advantage. She outweighs this guy significantly. So she flings her body at him in hopes of knocking him over. She's unsuccessful and he shoves her back into the wall.
Oh, no.
It's at this point when the man utters the only word she'd ever hear him speak. You're strong. And it's at that moment that Susan realizes what's going on. This man is here to kill her. The realization sets in and she gets a burst of adrenaline and realizes, you know, I've got to fight for my life if I want to get out of this.
Right.
So she flings herself at him again, screaming, "Who sent you?" But then the tables begin to turn. She manages to wrestle the hammer away from him. While the man has been using the hammer side to attack her, Susan's smarter than that, and she knows to inflict more damage to use the claw side. So she grabs the hammer away from him, gets back, and lands like 3 to 4 blows to the side of his fucking skull with the claw end of the hammer.
Fuck yes, Susan.
So after all this,
oh my God, is she jumping? How the fuck is she getting up that high?
I don't know.
I wonder if he's kind of getting down to get to her.
I don't know, but
oh shit!
The problem is at this point the hammer is getting slippery because it's covered in blood, and he's able to regain control of it. But then she lunges for him and grabs him by his fucking throat. She starts squeezing his airway, which of course she knew exactly where to squeeze, and begins screaming at him, "Who sent you here?" She squeezes his throat until he turns red, then purple, and only lets go when he starts turning blue, because she's not a killer. And she figures that the lack of oxygen might give her enough time to escape before he regains his senses.
Right.
But she's wrong. She takes off running and he catches her as she goes to flee down the hallway.
Fuck.
He grabs her from behind, spins her around and punches her. He punches her twice. The first blow splits her lip and the second knocks her down. So she's kind of dazed and he stands over her, still wielding the hammer. And Susan has another realization that she's going to die if she doesn't take this guy down. And she realizes her best bet is to get the fucking hammer away from him again. So she wrestles him to the floor and she starts biting him everywhere that she can get her teeth. She reasoned that if he successfully killed her, at least she would have marked him up to where they could identify her.
Yeah.
So then she starts biting his arm, his leg, his thigh. She even bites him in the groin through his pants.
Fuck yeah.
She's just going to town on him. And then she starts rifling through his pockets, trying to find his wallet and something that she can throw out.
Right.
So once again, if he kills her, they can identify this son of a bitch. But then she manages to get the upper hand. She flings her leg over him, climbs on top of him, hooks her left arm around his neck and screams, "Tell me who sent you here and I will call you a fucking ambulance." She leans forward and drives the forearm into the throat. He won't answer. And they just sit like that until he goes limp. So once he's out, she grabs the hammer, gets up and runs to a neighbor's house to call 911. 20 fucking minutes. This battle's going on.
Lee. Shit.
Yeah.
If she hadn't been an ER nurse and trained to fucking not freak out, not panic, just be able to do what you need to do, have logical thinking. I wouldn't think of that. I would be like, I need to get away. I need to run. Not I need to leave DNA evidence. I need to try to find his ID. That's muscle memory and good fucking training. And
yeah, and I mean the dexterity though to hang in there for nearly 20 fucking minutes.
She's a fucking champ. do for real.
So obviously she survives the attack, but the attacker and would-be hitman did not.
Oh,
she took killed him.
Oh, shit.
Like, she didn't want to, but she did. And that's the thing with the like 911 call is that like she's telling the neighbor that calls for her, like, you know, because they're like, do we need to send an ambulance? And she's like, no, my neighbor's a nurse. And she says he's dead. Like,
oh my God.
Yeah, she knew that he was down for the count. But who was this piece of shit? This dude's name was Ed Haffey, and he was a 59-year-old Vietnam vet. It did not take the police long to track him straight back to Susan's estranged husband, Mike. Ed had a long rap sheet, which included a conspiracy to commit aggravated murder charge from 1991. He had arranged the murder of his then 39-year-old girlfriend at that time, and for some reason only did 9 years on the charge.
Was the murder successful?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
He did 9 years.
He had hired a hitman.
Yeah, or something. I didn't find the details of that case, but yeah, like he had apparently had his girlfriend killed. They discovered her body like along some river. And yeah.
He
like,
only got 9 fucking years.
Yeah, well, I think the sentence is like 10 years, but he got out a little early because, you know.
Good behavior. He didn't arrange any killings in the prison. Pen.
Yeah. I mean, but they make it sound like his rap sheet. He did plenty of other bad shit. So I don't know. Anyway, he gets out in 2003 and moves to Portland, and he's looking for a job, and he finds one.
The porn store?
Yep. Working for Mike. Mm-hmm. So after all this goes down, it's not long before Mike is in custody after pulling some life is meaningless and I want to die bullshit antics. Like he bought a fucking gun and like was going to kill himself. Then he was going to check himself into a mental hospital. And like, he's just like laying it on thick with these cops and like, oh, you know, woe is me. And it's just not worth getting into because fuck this guy. I don't care about his story.
Mike. Yeah.
So then the question becomes like, if Mike is so in love with her and just couldn't like go on, why the hell did he want to kill her? The answer is really easy. He's broke.
Insurance money.
You would think. But the thing is that Susan had already changed the beneficiary.
He didn't fucking know it.
He did know. He did know. She changed it to her brother and he knew about it.
He's going to kill her brother too?
No. This fucking genius knew that the house that they lived in was paid off and was worth about $300,000.
Uh-huh.
So apparently he was going to kill her, get the house. Then this is the really funny part. The piece of shit that he hired to kill her, mm-hmm. who, by the way, when they did his autopsy, they found that he had a near fatal dose of cocaine in his system at the time.
That's how he was able to fuck. Cause he was 59.
Yeah.
But that's how he was able to fucking keep going. Go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, the way that he was going to pay that, he was going to pay that motherfucker $50,000. Now his broke ass didn't have $50,000. Mm-hmm. So somehow this galaxy brain thought that he was going to kill his wife, get the $300,000 by selling the house. Cause apparently he thought you can sell a house like overnight and have the money so he could pay his piece of shit friend for it's just the stupidest fucking plan ever. Like,
wow.
Yeah. Well,
what do you expect from these two dweebs? I mean,
yeah, can't even fathom like the level of fucking.
Well, clearly there was a lot of cocaine involved. And so you think a lot of things are good ideas, you know, when you're on speed. So
yeah, it's fucking wild. So on August 30th, 2007, Mike pled guilty to his charge and was sentenced. Now, he maintains that he only pled guilty because he was, you know, just trying to get it over with. He didn't do anything. He was really the victim. Oh,
he didn't hire the guy. Oh, my God.
Anyway, once again, fuck that guy. Who cares what he had to say? But unfortunately, because there's a really light sentence for this crime for some reason, was scheduled to be released on September 14th, 2014.
5 years?
I think he got 10, but he was like not.
Didn't set up any murders.
Yeah,
in
he
prison,
didn't do anything bad. So he was supposed to be released on September 14th. But sometimes the universe seems to correct man's shortcomings.
Uh-huh.
And this piece of shit dies of cancer on Friday the 13th in June of 2014. Just a couple months before he's supposed to get out, he fucking dies in prison.
Good.
So he's done. He's gone.
Good. Fuck Mike.
Yeah.
And fuck the other dude.
Ed Haffey.
Fuck yeah. That guy too.
So Susan continues to work as a nurse until 2014. She moves into a new house. She struggles with what she had done and couldn't fathom how people looked at her as a hero. She didn't feel like a hero and carried around the ghost of having taken a life. Her job was to save lives, not take them. So it really was like hard on her. Up.
Yeah.
But one of her bosses had a good way of summing it up to her, though. He told her, "They're not calling you a hero because you killed a man. They're calling you a hero because they want to believe, given the same circumstances, they too might survive."
Yeah.
And that's important because that is exactly what makes her a hero, because she did not go looking for fucking trouble.
Right.
She was living her life. Somebody put her in an impossible fucking situation and she persevered.
Yeah.
A lot of people seem to think that being a hero means like putting yourself into a dangerous situation and then just like killing people.
No,
but
she
that's
just didn't
not
give up.
What it is. Yeah. Yeah. Like, what makes her a hero is that she chose to live and to fight this fucking piece of shit and overcome.
That was coked up. Like, yeah. Girl.
Yeah.
Wow. Susan. Wow.
So
she is my hero. My yeah. God.
Yeah. She's a pretty amazing lady.
Yeah.
And like I said, when I started this, like, she doesn't want publicity or fame or anything. Like, you know, sometimes people will, you see this a lot with the people who like shoot an intruder in their house or something and then they get on TV like they're fucking Superman.
Yeah.
She's not like that at all. Like, it was 10 years before she did any like media about it. She just was like, leave me alone. I just want to like deal with this because I'm having a hard time.
Yeah. Poor baby.
But yeah, as far as I can tell, she's been doing good ever since.
Good.
Just hanging in there. Another side note, though, that was found after the fact of the crime with the sloppy piece of shit that was supposed to be a hitman. This motherfucker, the police processed the scene and everything, which it was a fucking mess, like, because, you know,
yeah, they were
battle
bleeding
to the death, yeah, blood everywhere. But they never went into the basement. So they go down into the basement, Susan and a friend, because they're like getting her stuff out, and they find a backpack down there. And in the backpack, this stupid motherfucker has a notebook with notes in it, like, call Mike. Like, it.
Oh.
He might as well.
My God. Like,
yeah. They were so fucking messy that it's not even funny.
Wow.
There was no way they were getting away with this, irregardless. Like, because you really think this coked up piece of shit would have remembered to go back down to the basement and get his backpack afterwards?
Left the fucking evidence.
He would have just taken off. Like, yeah. So. Yeah. But okay. No, that's the story of how Susan beat the shit out of some dude and took him out, saved her own life, and her piece of shit husband went to prison for it.
Good. And then died in.
And then died in prison before he could ever get out.
Yeah.
So both of those pieces of shit are gone.
Well, unfortunately for Noella, I'm pretty sure he's still in prison, but he's still alive. But two badass women just kicking ass.
Yep.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great feel-good story.
Mm-hmm. Susan, I know you're not listening, but damn, you are a badass.
Yeah.
I just hope I have, if I'm ever in a horrific situation like that, just a smidgen of your
of
fucking
that fight.
Forethought and mm-hmm. just being able to stay calm, because I sometimes I'm calm in high stress situations, but a lot of times I just freak the fuck out.
I don't think she stayed calm. I think that she just channeled her rage, because one of the things that she remembers the most about the fight was that she remembers distinctively the things that she was yelling at this piece of shit. Like,
yeah,
she was not. I mean, she was collected. She wasn't calm.
Yeah, that's
she was
the
collected.
Right word. Yeah.
Like
she was able to have rational thought.
Yeah.
And most people or me wouldn't.
Well, I mean, most people when faced with a similar situation, yeah, their first instinct would be to turn tail and run.
Right.
Like, even a lot of these badass wannabe hero pieces of shit, if they were confronted and they were, I mean, because this woman, she wasn't in, you know, tactical gear with a weapon. She's wearing fucking scrubs and Birkenstocks. Like,
yeah.
And she's confronted and she handles business. But most people would have ran away.
Yeah.
Because, or at least backed up enough to like try to get their wits about him. But yeah, that split second thinking was what
saved her life.
Yeah, definitely. Because awesome. Yeah, that cokehead would have definitely.
Yeah. Because he would have gone down a lot sooner, though, had he not been on coke.
Yeah. The four hammer blows to the head. Yeah, that would have probably taken him out. But
yeah. Shit.
But it's also worth noting, like, this motherfucker was going to commit a murder on credit. Like,
right.
How pathetic are you to commit a murder on credit? Like,
yeah, no, that's so dumb. All right. Great. But
they're both no longer with us. So Yay. Who gives a shit?
Who
may they
gives
rot?
A shit? They is rotted. We have a question, and it was more of a Halloween question, but we know we did our Halloween one last week.
Right.
And so I have it, but I thought this would be funny for you. Our question is, we have to marry a horror movie monster. Which one is it and why?
You know, I had a little bit of time to think about this question, but I still am just drawing a blank on it. Like, my first thought would be maybe something or somebody from one of the like Clive Barker universe.
Damn. Okay. I know you went real dark.
Yeah, because I'm just thinking, like, if you know, you're gonna not last very long anyway in that situation. I don't know.
Maybe they like you and they don't kill you. If I had to, like, if probably get down with Bela Lugosi's Dracula, but I want that one. I don't want, I mean, not that I mind the one from Bram Stoker. What's his name? It's got to be the actor, too. We always forget his name.
Well, in my defense, I haven't watched that movie in
he's a great. Long he's time. In everything. And we're always like, why do we forget his name?
Well, because the makeup in that movie
Gary Oldman
is amazing. And
Gary Oldman.
Forget who I all could the actors I could be were, with. Except for Keanu.
Shut up. Leave Keanu alone. He did the best he fucking could. And he totally made up for it in Constantine. Anyways.
You have a lot more choices, though. Like, I don't really have that many choices.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, Swamp Thing or the creature from the Black Lagoon could be a lady.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I mean, they could be.
But I don't think so.
Who else could you? Mm-hmm. Looks like you're kind of stuck with a witch or something. Or with, I guess.
Yeah.
Or like a demon.
Yeah.
You get down with a demon chick, like a succubus. I mean, shit.
That's the same fucking thing that would be in the Clive Barker universe. Like, that's any true. Of the creatures out of Midian, any of the Cenobites. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm probably going to marry Bela Lugosi's Dracula.
You get options because, yeah. Like, Bela Lugosi, like, that Dracula mm-hmm. could, like, seduce you and then you could have like you could become one of his brides and everything's fine for the yeah. men. It's more like you're gonna die, like
he's, yeah, you're gonna you're die getting,
yeah.
I mean, I'm gonna have to die too, and then what if somebody stakes me?
But then
I mean,
you get to, but he takes care of the brides. They live
still
in the,
get staked.
Well, yeah, just because that situation goes crazy.
You could have the Bride of Frankenstein. She's no cute.
I thought of that though, but like
she that's, cute.
Yeah, but she's also terrifying.
But she cute.
And if she didn't like Frankenstein, what makes me think that she would like me? She might just get it over with and then destroy me. Like, I don't.
I mean.
She seems very high maintenance.
Yeah, it's okay.
No, I'm not going to shoot for that one. That one's.
So instead, you're going to go for one
that's definitely going to kill me. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Well. I'm not. There's no ambiguity needed. I'm just going to go for the one that's going to do the job.
I mean, all right.
Yeah.
Cut right to it.
Yep, still gonna, exactly.
I'm going to give a bell. Yeah, that's probably the one. Like, I wouldn't want, like, you know, a wolf man or anything. But he stinks.
The wet dog smell all the time. Yeah,
God, right? And he would come back and be covered in God knows what. And, like, on the carpet. rude.
I mean, even like the transformation looks slimy. So the fur would be wet. So
and then
it
I'd always have
smell.
To worry about when he did transform, like making sure I was really fucking far away. And what if he was like really needy, like clingy? And I'm like, look, bro, you're about to turn into, oh, okay, I'm dying.
Well, I think you're supposed to chain them up on the full moon night in like a place that's they can't get out of and do a bunch of other stuff.
No, I'm going to let him go. Live your best life. Well, I ain't trying to clean up that mess. But let him go transform it.
Well, no, because that's not what they do. They transform wherever they are. And then they kill whatever's around
that's
them.
That's why I'm leaving. I wouldn't be with that anyway because it stinks. You know, the creature from the Black Lagoon smells too. Mm-hmm. He just smells like, ugh, especially like if it's the lagoon is like turning over. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And plus, he would have gills in weird places. And what if you stuck your finger in one?
Yeah.
And I don't want to be a forest bride.
Well, that's mm-mm. for Bigfoot. That's not.
He's still a monster.
He's not a horror movie monster.
They've made a horror movie out of him. Yeah, remember?
I remember.
It scared me.
I know.
Because they were lost in the woods. He took the lady. So, yeah, I am not trying to get. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. That's a little too much nature for me. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
So we've got our picks. That's what we got.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Head on over to our website at mystifiedpod.com. You can find info on this episode and all of our other episodes. You can find our merch. You can leave us a review, which is really great. You can subscribe and follow our podcast to get notifications whenever we release new episodes. Our links to our social media is there too. But if you want to head directly over to Instagram, we're at mystified_pod, or head on over to Facebook to our discussion group, which is Mystified Podcast Discussion Group. We like to hang out and chat and share memes, and you know, it's how we get through this current timeline right now, is being silly in there. If you like what we do, we would really appreciate it if you did leave us a review and some stars. Do you have any parting words for us, sir?
I'm just still kind of pissed off about the whole 10 years for solicitation of murder bullshit.
No shit. It
just really seems like you should go away for a long time that.
Regardless if you actually kill the person or not, planning and setting it up for someone else to kill this person.
Yeah, because that person wouldn't have gotten murdered if it wasn't for you. Like,
yeah,
you literally are the problem.
Just fucking stop that. Like, seriously, get a divorce. Move on. Go do something else.
Yeah.
Don't kill.
I mean, you could always try fuck off and die and just don't poison the planet with your toxicity anymore.
Whatever. If you feel like you need to kill your spouse, go sit in
just
the woods
practice
somewhere.
On yourself. Yeah. That's
just
my advice.
Stop it. That just pisses me off so bad.
So
that and family annihilators. That's just.
Yeah.
That's. Ugh.
That's slightly worse. But.
All right. Well, everyone, just have a little Susan in you. Don't give up. Don't stop fighting. And love your curves. Mm-hmm. That's all you gotta do. That's all you gotta do.
And beat the living shit out of anybody that gets in your way.
Fuck yes. Yeah.
So.
I really want to hang out with Susan.
I know. She seems like an awesome lady.
I really want to know her. Maybe she'll be my pen pal. Okay. All right. Until next time. Bye.
Mystified.
Podcast.